Welcome to Education Suspended, a podcast focused on exploring, engaging, and dialoguing with those in education who are passionate about changing the status quo and evolving the archaic system we have inherited. Hey, everybody, welcome to Education Suspended. Jessica Pfeiffer here. Also, welcome to winter break. Before we start talking about today's episode, I want to take a moment and welcome our newest intern to the team. Her name is Leanna, and this is the first episode that she edited for us, and we're going to be working with her for the next 3 months. So welcome, Leanna. Thanks for all that you're doing. It's such an honor to have you and your talent. Okay, let's talk about today's episode. I could not think of a better way to end 2023. I found this interview so motivating and so inspiring. So Steve and I sit down and have the honor of connecting with Coach Sean Sorsby, who is the founder and executive director of A Step Ahead Chess. He is so engaging and he is so authentic and genuine about his desire to change the lives of youth and students through the game of chess. His story is fantastic. I really love and have so many notes following our interview with him. He highlights that you just can't make diversity happen, that it really and truly must be a cultural shift that innately creates that diversity. He is a past teacher, and so he also talks about how and what he learned as a teacher shaped how he formed this organization, and also how there were some benefits of how he entered the teaching world from a different lens. Honestly, it's just such a good interview, and again, it is a perfect way to end 2023. Thank you all for listening in 2023, for sharing this podcast in 2023, for doing all the work that you do with our students and our families in 2023. We are lucky to have you as listeners. We are grateful, and I'll see you all in 2024. All right, y'all, sit back and enjoy Education Suspended with Coach Sorsby.
Have a great day at school. Stay kind and curious.
Oh, look at there. I love the logo.
Oh, what's up? What's up, Steve?
Oh, I'm so fascinated by all of this. I can't wait.
Well, I was telling Grainer, obviously you and I touched base a couple weeks ago as we were preparing and seeing if this would work. And so I know you're so busy and I appreciate your time, sir.
Something like this is worth it. After I met and talked to Jessica and just heard about everything you all were doing, I'm like, yeah, I would love to sit down and talk more. Like, really cool. You guys are doing great work.
Well, thank you. We're equally thankful for having you.
Awesome.
Let's just jump in. I still love the art behind your head. Like,
oh man. Did I tell you that I met Tiny? I met Tiny and his family, and we want to do another project. So Steve, so this guy in the back of me, this is Tiny Adewumi. They were Nigerian refugees. They came over to the States. And while living in a homeless shelter, Tiny learned chess and became the New York City State Chess Champ.
Unbelievable.
And from there, he went on to become one of the youngest chess masters in U.S. history. Great family, just great people. And it just really shows like that chess can be like a tool to like a better life. It's a dope story that we like to highlight.
That's beautiful. And it's a beautiful painting.
That's a perfect segue where I was going to try it ahead and then I got distracted. But we start all of our podcasts the same, Coach. I'm going to have you introduce yourself to our listeners, talk about what you do, how you got there. And then if you would connect your own story and experience as a student and any connections to what it has you doing now, we'd love that as well.
For sure.
Does that sound okay?
Sounds good. Cool. So thank you guys, of course, for having me. Really excited about this. So I'm Coach Sean Sorsby from Chicago, Illinois. I actually grew up in the Inglewood area. Grew up there on the south side of Chicago. My mom met my stepdad when I was about 10, and we moved to this neighborhood called Beverly, which is a lot different than Inglewood. So I went to school with like almost all Black kids, and then it was like, oh, they're like all kind of families here. So that was very interesting as far as my like educational background. Then I went to Morgan Park High School, which is an elite school for Black and brown kids in Chicago. Then for college, I went to U of I in Urbana-Champaign, which is a PWI. So it's very unique to go from, you know, back and forth. It was very interesting educational experience. I never thought I would ever be working with kids ever. So it's funny how I kind of got here. I started off with the idea that I wanted to make a lot of money and then I would give back like with money, right? Went to school for architecture in undergrad, decided I didn't want to do architecture. Then I got my master's in architecture and I got my master's in business. So I got my MBA from U of I. I was like, yeah, I got my MBA. I'm going to do this money thing. It's going to be great. And then I just wasn't really fulfilled, you know, and you hear the story a lot where like, you know, you think money will bring happiness and all that. And it's nothing wrong. I'm not saying like you don't need money, but there are a lot of people that are making money that are not really fulfilled. And when I went back to my old high school to be a wrestling coach, I really saw like, wow, like this is not how it was when I was here. The city had really changed a lot. And it really just kind of, you know, I just had to change your heart and say, all right, how can I get into like working with youth? I thought I was pretty good at math. So I became a math teacher, worked at a charter school, and soon was like teaching college algebra. And as I was working with youth, I said, man, let me find a way where I can connect with them outside the classroom. And that was when I started chess clubs. So I would start these chess clubs at these schools. We're playing chess, having fun. And we noticed that their math grades were going up, the students that were in chess. And it made sense because it was critical thinking, problem solving, all of that stuff like in a game. So you're playing this game and having fun, but all these other things are happening. That's kind of how I got led into the chess thing. And before you know it, I just started doing this. Like, this was my thing. I left school and was like, all right, I'm just going to do this full time. So we started a Step Ahead Chess about 10 years ago. We're a 501c3 based here in Chicago, but we have youth from all over the country and even in the Bahamas. My wife is from there, so I've taught in Chicago, I've taught in New York City, I've taught in Gary, I've taught in the Bahamas. And yeah, we actually have students in all of those places now. It's pretty cool.
I mean, you kind of answered it, but I'm still have this question in my mind, you know, why chess? The reason you chose that as the vehicle for, you know, your mission with kids, just personally, why it ended up that way.
It's interesting. Like, I wish I could say I had this like master plan behind it. A lot of it kind of just happened because, you know, I mean, when I was growing up, like you can either be like smart or cool, but you couldn't do both. And what I like to say is now we've actually found out how to do both. So, you know, we've taken this thing, chess, where when you think of chess, you think about like a bunch of nerds getting together and it's not cool. It's not cool at all. So what we do is we actually bring the nerdy part and the cool part together, and it's chess lessons on the board and life lessons off the board. Traditionally, school is not very fun. School is very like punitive. It's the thing of, hey, if you do this, you're going to get in trouble. You go to the principal's office. If you don't work hard, you're going to fail. It's like, that's not fun. And all those places I've taught, Chicago, New York, Bahamas, everywhere, all across the board, kids did not want to go to school. And it's like, there's this thing of, wait, education should be like inspiring. It should be this thing of, I want to learn new things. It's going to make me a better person. I'm going to be able to give back and make the world a better place. And kids don't like to go. Something's wrong with that. Man. So, you know, to take a thing like chess, which can be very overwhelming, you guys may have been exposed to it when you were younger. And a lot of adults are like, it was too much. It was overwhelming. It seemed like it was boring. I didn't want to do it. So we make that thing fun. It's like, if you can make chess fun, you can make anything fun, you know? So it's very interesting. Like, it took this thing of chess and like all kinds of kids are playing it. Like, we've proven that this stigma that's behind it is false because, you know, Black and brown kids can play and thrive in it. Girls can play. Like, it's for everybody.
This is just my quick follow-up. And that was it. Actually, you just addressed it, but I would love to know the diversity of the kids age-wise, demographics, anything like that. I was so curious as I looked on your website, the diversity level of those who are getting involved.
Yeah. So we start, Steve, ages 6 and up. Although my son, who just turned 5 last month, he's already playing and he's competing in tournaments. So we made a few exceptions, started at age 4, but it's super diverse. And again, I can't say I planned that either. When we started in the Bahamas, you know, all Black kids. And I was like, oh, we're going to have this all Black chess team. They're doing great. They're winning trophies. And we came to Chicago through COVID when everything shut down. By word of mouth, we had parents just saying, oh, there's this online program. This is really cool. My child is in it. It brought joy back in our house. And before you know it, just by word of mouth, we started getting people from all over. And it's interesting when you think about the whole thing of being diverse. Diversity is not a thing that you can make happen and push to say, okay, well, let's find more Black kids and just find them. You know, let's actually hire more, whatever. You have to have a culture and a community that's welcoming to everyone. And that's what we've done. So now when you look at the program, you see Black, white, Indian, Asian, all these kids, young people playing together, having fun together, and they don't care about race or color or age or where you're from. They're just bonding through this game that they all love. You know, I joke about it, it's like all the nerds are getting together like, yeah, we're nerds and we're proud of it. You know, it's really cool. It's really, I mean, I look back and like, this is kind of fascinating. You know, I'm just so proud of young people. I'm proud of the coaches. One of the things we do is what we realize is that one of the issues with chess programs is that finding like quality coaches, but not only quality coaches, but coaches that are not only good at chess, but also good at working with young people. As you can imagine, most chess players are, you know, they're not very personable and a lot of them don't really like kids. So it's like, I play chess, but I don't really want to work with like 5-year-olds. So what we learned is that, well, we had to, when it came to our coaches, that we actually had to grow that. So what we're doing is we're creating a pipeline where you start off in a K-8 journey. You're learning the game, competing in tournaments. Then you get to high school, you become a mentor. And now you're going, now you coach the K-8 students. But not only are you doing that, we're putting money in your pocket for it. You're actually getting paid. So this is your first job and you're learning how to show up on time and be prepped with your lessons and all that stuff. And then because it's a hybrid model, when you go off to college, which most of our students do, and they're studying all the STEM fields and engineering and computer science and all of that, getting scholarships. Once they do that, they can still be connected to the program because it's a hybrid model. We just had a student from the west side of Chicago in the Bryant Park area, just got accepted and started school at Yale. He's at Yale right now, you know, and he's still coaching with us. So think about what that does for a young person that sees him like, oh, I saw him come from a student high school. Now he's in college. Oh, now I can see my pathway too.
I love that. And I love what you said before of like lessons off the board. And when you and I met preparing for this, I was sharing with you when I was little, across the street lived Grandpa Max and Grandma Lean. And I would always go over and I would play chess with Grandpa Max. Now, he never let me win, but I still liked it, right? It was so relational. I don't know what it was about it. Now I'm not that great at chess, but I remember vividly playing chess when I was little. And I'm thinking about these little kids and all the lessons, but in particular, the executive functioning skills that are necessary to get through a game of chess. I mean, it seems like there would be a lot, right? You have to be able to sustain your attention. You have to be able to essentially prioritize your moves, right? Think a couple steps ahead. And that effort, right? It's not like a game that goes quick. Like you have to sustain the effort, which can be challenging. How else do you see this impacting and helping these kids grow in this area that we often hear teachers have a lot of concerns about the executive functions in the classroom? What other ways do you see this grow?
Yeah. I mean, you've hit on a few things. And I think grit, you know, grit is one of the most important things that a young person can build, right? So persevering through things. We have this partnership with this organization, we talked about Jessica, this partnership with this organization called the Block. And they're a boxing organization. And their motto is that fighters don't quit. So what we noticed with our players at the Block is that after they lost games, they came back even more ready. They're like, I lost, but I can't wait to come back. I'm going to practice. I'm going to do this because fighters don't quit, right? So these are transferable skills, right? They can be boxing. It could be chess. It can be your job, your family, whatever it is. You don't quit. And what we say is that it's not a loss. It's a lesson. We want from early on you to know that failure is actually one of the best things you can run toward to in life. You shouldn't be afraid to fail. Right. If you actually fall in love with the process of learning, which will be tough. Right. When we say joy based learning, doesn't mean it's going to be easy, but you're actually falling in love and getting excited about losing. I mean, think about that. Like, oh, my God, I just lost this game, but I just learned something new and I can't wait to use that for the next game. You know, and it's all about how you frame it. Right. And it's, you know, it's really something where I think we have to kind of deconstruct the current educational system to say, well, now what we're doing is we're, you know, kids are afraid. They're afraid to fail. It's set up like that. Like you're either at the top of the class or you're at the bottom. Right. So, and when you think about that, there's pressures on both ends. If I'm at the bottom of the class, well, I'll never get up there. But if I'm at the top, all the pressure I'm putting up on myself and others to stay there. But when it's a community and you're all learning together, there's no top or bottom. We're just all in it, like all together. And that's what we have to do in education, in society, in the workforce. I mean, all around, like, I think that's the solution to this huge problem that we have right now.
I'm really interested in how kids learn to compete and actually tap into the process you just beautifully described. Do they kind of find each other as far as levels of expertise and skill, or do you guys set that up? Just interested in the competitive part, because I think competition is magical if kids can harness it and learn from it, as you just very, very wisely put. But maybe just some nuts and bolts about how you do that.
Yeah. That's a great question, Steve. So a few things. So one of the challenges, right, as I know, when I started coaching myself, is that I would have 20 young people in the room. I'm trying to teach them a chess lesson, but they're all at different levels, right? And teachers experience this all the time. How do you do that? Well, you actually can't. You actually need more people. So what we learned is that instead of having one coach, we needed to have at least three or four coaches teaching smaller groups at their skill level. So we'll hop in a Zoom meeting just like this one, and we'll all meet together. We're all doing icebreakers, having fun. We're all getting to know each other. Then we jump into breakout rooms where there's one coach coaching all of the beginners. They're just learning the pieces. Then there's a novice. I know the pieces, but I don't really know a strategy. Right. Then you're learning more strategy. Then you're getting ready for tournaments. So there's all these different levels. But the idea is that we're all still on the same team. So if you're in advance, one day you may be coaching some of the younger students that are coming up. You see, so that's where it becomes more healthy competition. But there's also something very unique about chess where your physical ability does not matter. So if we're saying, all right, let's have a race. All right, you can try and run, but if you're not fast, you're just not fast. It just is what it is. But your brain muscle, right? We need to teach young people your brain is also a muscle and you can work that muscle out. You know what I mean? So your physical ability does not stop you. You can be tall, short, doesn't matter. You can be 18. We've seen 6 and 7 year olds become some of the youngest masters ever. So if you can be that young and then still beat older people, it doesn't matter. So they can go home, play their parents. Right. They're excited about beating mom and dad. Like it's.
Finish that thought about the parents, because that was one of my questions, is then are you able to engage parents and teach parents? So this is also a game that's played at home and they got all that positive interaction going on. That was just another question I had and you brought it up. So I thought maybe I'd jump on and ask.
Yeah, for sure, Steve. So one of the things we do is that every child that's in the program gets their own chess board. Now they can take that chess board home and not only play with parents, but they're playing with a younger brother, a younger sister, cousins, right? Taking something that they've learned back to the community. We've heard young people say all the time, oh, I just taught my cousins the pieces and they're learning and like they want to learn too. You know, so like that part, like that's special because we're trying to plant in them. We're trying to plant these seeds of, once you have the knowledge, you actually have a responsibility now to teach others. And when I was coming up with chess, what it seemed like is that the people that have the knowledge, they weren't really trying to teach you. They were just trying to crush you. Like they would beat you bad and be like, all right, kid, scram. You know what I mean? But it wasn't a lot of teaching going on. Right. So, you know, I mean, for example, we took our students to New York City. This is part of the chess lessons off the board. We took them out to New York City this summer. We explored the city for 5 days. We went to stuff like the Met Art Museum, went to the Yankees game. One of their funnest moments, though, was going to the park. So we went to chess in the park. All of the like OGs were there playing. And it was like guys, they're like 60 years old, like just taking the kids on like, hey, like, let me show you this and that. And I was like, wow, like this is what it's supposed to be like. You know what I mean? This is what matters here. So that was super cool. Like that exposure, being up in New York and then competing in a tournament. So after this long trip, they compete in a tournament and we actually won the tournament. Amazing, amazing experience.
That's amazing. Coach, I'm wondering for you, right? I really like your model, right? This focus on building leadership and at the same time, a really kind of rich relational approach. And I'm just wondering for you, where does that come from for you? Like your knowledge and knowing that the relational component is just as important or maybe more important than the other pieces in the success of these kids. Like where did that show up for you?
Man, that's a good question. You guys got good questions. So it's interesting. I think not having the educational background actually helped me. I think that when you come up in any system and you're trained in that system, you're naturally going to operate how everyone else does. I kind of came from the outside with like different ideas, right? And one of the things, even before I started teaching, I actually worked with this program with Children's Home in Aid, where it was teenage pregnancy prevention. And the idea was that in order to prevent young people from making risky the decisions, you had to give them a vision of what their life would like look like. So we worked with a lot of therapists, and I would just be in the room all day with these therapists, and they were telling me about, and this was back before people were talking about social and emotional learning and stuff. And they talked about that so much, of how that was so important for a child to learn. Like, you have to first address them as a person. If someone's not eating at night, they're not going to come to school and be focused. If they're dealing with all this outside, you know, if they're not good as a whole person, how can they do all these other things? So I think that really shaped my mindset, that when I got into teaching, I was like, okay, before I actually try to get you to learn this super tough thing, I got to show you that I care first. Because my coaches growing up, we wanted to work very hard for the coaches because we know that they cared about us doing well. And even now, you know, Coach Sorsby, right? So all of my coaches, it's coach who, coach whatever. And that's a mindset of, you're a coach. It's not like you can be a chess instructor, but I think being a coach is more about focusing on the whole person, you know?
You're speaking our love language with the word coach. I'm just watching Grainer's wheels turn, because obviously we focus on education in this podcast, but we both have a soft spot for the role of extracurriculars, in particular sports, and the role of coaches, because to your point, there is this kind of innate alignment of teaching, but in a different sense. And so thank you for bringing that up.
Well, another question I had, you know, I know the stereotypes around chess, although I, like Jessica, I grew up playing chess and knowing how, loved it. In fact, I caught a quote from one of your kids on the website. He said, "I've learned to think slowly and wisely." And I thought that was like one of the most beautiful statements I had read. Like, if you can do that with a child, you've done an amazing thing. I was just wondering, thinking back to some of my teaching experience, really more around poetry, not chess, but how you were able to acknowledge kids in their schools, or, you know, in the environment they're in, or what kind of things are you able to do to acknowledge the mastery of these kids?
Man, okay. So this is the thing. I mean, obviously, like all our students, the goal is to have them competing in tournaments. So we compete almost all year round. Whenever there's a competition, we're winning medals and trophies. We actually go to the schools, try to celebrate them in front of everyone. They bring their medals to school, right? You know, so, and kids are like, "Oh, wait, what? You're on the chess team?" You know? And it's interesting, because when we first started, a lot of kids were like, kind of like, didn't want to let people know they were playing chess. Like, "Hey, I'm playing chess, whatever." But then when they got those medals, they're like, "Yeah, I'm on the chess team." And it's cool to be on the chess team, you know? So that's definitely a big part of it. I will say, though, early on, I got frustrated. I got frustrated early on with working with some schools, because they had a very big emphasis on, even though I always believe chess is a sport, but on other sports that they had, right? So the basketball team and football teams, they might get like a pep rally, you know? And I'm like, man, these kids are like, yeah, I mean, if this was football, imagine the type of light that would be shined on these kids. Like, we had kindergartens and first graders go down state and place in state. You know, like, that's huge. Like, we go to this tournament with 400 students. There may be a couple other Black kids there. And we come with all these other, and they're like, "Wait, what is this? Where is this team coming from?" And then we actually go and win. Like, imagine how much light would be put on that if that was a football team. But I try not to be, you know, like a hater with it. Like, you know, like, I don't want to sound like that guy that, like, no, you know what I mean? It's just part of what we're doing now. But that's why I want to have this big emphasis on making it cool. You gotta make learning cool. If it's not cool and fun, kids are not going to want to do it.
That joy-based perspective. I want to go back because you did bring up a program that I'm obsessed with, The Block. But one thing that I really love about your program that is also a big emphasis in that program, like you said, is this, I don't know how you said it. I think you said running towards failure, right? This, the power of being okay to make a mistake. And to your point, we don't have that in schools right now. I think we're getting a little bit better, but for many kids, it's, you know, school can be this really high anxiety provoking experience because the expectations placed before them are not developmentally appropriate. So I'm wondering, do you have a kid in mind or a story that comes up when you think about the power of failure and how a kid kind of persevered through it?
Oh, wow. So many stories about that. I can share one with you. So there's a student named Jaden. Jaden is from Minnesota, and he actually had a chess club at his school. So when he first tried chess, he did not like it. He went in there. He was the only Black kid in the program. He didn't think it was cool. He didn't think it was fun. So he quit chess. He was like, no, chess is just not for me. His mom finds this online program during the pandemic. And she's like, oh, my gosh, let's try chess. And dad's like, no, Jay tried chess. He doesn't like it. Dad doesn't want to force him to do something that he doesn't want to do. Mom says, no, let's try it. So Jaden comes on, logs into the session just like this. And he sees coaches that look like him. And it's fun and it's cool. And he falls in love with the game. And last year, he becomes the Minnesota State Chess Champion. And it's such an incredible story because this is someone who actually tried the game and was like, I can't do it, and quit it. He actually quit the game at one point. But then now with a different framework, he falls in love with it and becomes very, I mean, he's one of the top players, if not the top player in the club right now. It's just phenomenal how when you can just change the environment, so much can change. I'm trying not to hit my desk because on that desk, I almost hit the desk really hard on that.
Oh, look at that executive functioning. You must play chess.
A little bit.
Nailed it. Okay. Well, you just said you've got to change the environment. And so I'm gonna beat Steve to this question. So Grainer, I'm so sorry. But Grainer always asks, like from a practical standpoint, when we're talking to teachers, what are some things that educators can do when just, you know, keeping the game of chess in mind? Are there things that they can be doing in their own classroom to change the environment a little bit?
Part of it is the classroom environment is so tough to begin with. You know, you have one instructor for, 30 students. You don't have a whole lot of support. You don't have a whole lot of resources. You have your bosses telling you that, your bosses who have other bosses that are telling them that you need to focus on these test scores and you don't have time to do certain things. And I remember, like, I actually tried at one point at one school I was at to do chess during, like, my math lesson. And I was like, what the hell are you doing? They need to learn this, and this skill. But I'm like, but this is fun. And they're doing this. Like, no, you can't do that. You know what I mean? So it's you know, so there's not a lot of freedom, right? So if you want people to truly be innovators and disruptors and make a difference, they have to have freedom to be able to do that. But our current system doesn't really allow that to happen. So, you know, with all that said, I mean, given the environment that you do have, you really got to focus on that, showing that you care, showing that you love them first, you know, like really, truly, like getting to know them as a person like that. You should probably spend your first week, especially if you're like a new teacher at a new school, getting to know them and the culture. When I taught in Harlem, those students in Harlem, you know, had a different culture than the students that were up in Chicago. They had a different slang. You know, they had different, I'm like, wait, what does that mean? What is that? And they would joke with first, but after a while I started using the words and they're like, oh, all of a sudden I was a cool teacher because I actually took the time to learn their language. So now when I'm teaching something, I can break it down and meet you actually where you're at. That's so important. How can you meet people where they're at if you don't take the time to actually get to know them?
I just want to go back to, I got really excited earlier on in our conversation. You say, we all meet together, we're a community. But then we identify the layers of skill and the layers of expertise that kids have. And even out of that, then you've made a place for everyone, it seems like. And then within that, you're even creating mentors, and the vehicle is chess. But I don't think it's the only vehicle. No. And just maybe comment on that, because I love the layered look of your groups and how everybody belongs and everybody has a place and everybody's learning. It's like athletics. You're only as, you know, you only have as much skill as you bring to the field or the court. And then we got to take you from there. That's what coaches do. And I think that's the power of the word coach, as you wisely described it. But have you been able to think of other ways to kind of extrapolate or take chess and say, we can apply this to other things too?
For sure. I mean, like it just happens to be chess. Like this, it's about the community and the framework and the culture that you're building. You can do that anywhere. We were blessed during the pandemic that we were just trying to solve a problem that happened like this. And we were able to pivot and say, okay, well, let's do it virtually. Oh, well, shoot, if it's virtual now, I don't need an actual building, a physical space. Oh, if it's virtual, I can have a coach here and a coach there. And I got a coach in Oklahoma and one in New York and one in Michigan, and they're all coming together on the same call. Oh, that's pretty cool. You know, you got people from different cultures all coming in all together, which really cuts the cost down, because schools will tell you, well, like we can have four teachers in one room with 20 students. That doesn't, you know what I'm saying? Like how? Like, how does that happen? But we're able to do that in this format, you know? So at the end of the day, I mean, you got to, capital and resources are important. I don't think that discussion is happening enough, that no matter what kind of organization that you are, you're still a business. And I don't think that we look at educational institutions like that, but we have to start doing that as well. And the thing is, we are actually investing. If you look at the return on investment, we have students that are getting scholarships, right? So we might have had a couple $100,000 in donations, but we have millions of dollars in scholarships. That's a great investment, you know?
Can you just elaborate a little bit on the online presence and how accessible it might be for anyone listening to this podcast?
Yeah, we actually give free trials to anyone who wants to try the program out. Anybody anywhere can come sign up, join us, see what the community is like. If you don't like it, you never have to come back. But if you do, you know, you're a part of the club now. And we have tournaments in Chicago every month. But when we take these trips, this trip we took to New York City, we had people from Minnesota. Jaden came from Minnesota, people from Florida, students from the Bahamas, Chicago, students in New York that we had never met before, met us there. And we're like, oh my gosh, we're like all together. And with students, parents, siblings, it was 100 people that were all together in New York City. It's crazy. Y'all should have seen. It's like, we had these, I got the shirt somewhere. We had these like ASAC shirts, the Stubby Head Chess shirts. And we're walking around like the streets of New York, like 100 deep. And folks are like, what the heck is this? But yeah, but it was like, hey, you know, it doesn't matter where you're at. Like, you can tap in.
Okay. I want to take a hard left, and I'm sorry if you did not see this coming, okay. But I do love the fact that you were an educator for several years. And I know we've kind of referenced this and you've said, you know, some of the connections, but can you share some of the things that you learned as a teacher that you knew you had to have as part of your program?
For sure. I mean, sometimes for me, I learn best with learning what not to do. So I hate to really like trash the whole educational system, but I actually learned about what it shouldn't be. I'm like, okay. That doesn't work. That makes, yes, think about the stress level that teachers have. Even though I had the passion and wanted to make a difference, it was so stressful, right? It wasn't fulfilling like I needed it to be. And not only was it stressful, I didn't feel like what I was doing was having that deep impact, because it was so much focus on getting these test scores and like all that type of stuff. I'm like, well, how is this going to really have an impact? But I would say I learned the most from the young people. I learned the most from being around them, from actually hearing they, you know, ask them what the problems are. Like, you know, let's actually take the time. If you give them a voice and give them ownership, that's what I learned. Because I would spend so much time just talking to young people and seeing where they thought about, like, so like, how do you feel about school? Like, why do you not like it? Why do you do that? You know what I mean? And they would tell you, right? And you know, young people are straight up. They're like, oh my gosh, oh, this it's so boring. Sorry, it's so boring. Oh my gosh, that why we, you know what I mean? It's like, wow, okay, well, like, what can we do to like change that? So I think, you know, because education is such a like top down thing. I'm saying this wrong, but it's such a thing of like, I'm the teacher or I'm the whatever, and like I'm the boss and it goes my way. That's part of the issue. It really should be going to the students first and having them take ownership of their classroom. Because now they have ownership of the classroom, it is more like a team. It is more, I'm your coach and your mentor and we're in it together. That's what I took away the most. And it didn't matter if they were from Chicago, New York, Gary, the Bahamas, all across the board, young people are all the same. That's what I really took away. And now, you know, that's what I think is making the difference with what we're doing now.
You're giving them a sense of agency, right? And you're connecting the learning to the real world, which is really how you started talking about the game of chess in the very beginning, right? The lessons are not just on the board. It connects to the real world. There is a vested interest, not just succeeding at the game of chess, but in ways that it's going to build them as a human.
There's value. I mean, what's your value proposition? You know, at the end of the day, you know, if students don't find education valuable, then we've got the whole thing all wrong.
Coach, I often, and Jessica's probably heard me say this too many times, but I often share with teachers, your job is not to fix kids. Your job is to find them. They're already special. They already have this inner light. They already have this spark. And it seems like you've managed to figure that out. And I don't know that I'm even asking a question, but as I listen to you talk, I really get inspired, is that you're finding a gift inside of kids that's already there. You're not fixing them. You're giving them a world that opens up for them, and you're learning from them. I don't know how many times we can ask you to comment on that, but I hope that's a message all of our educators are hearing, because it's so powerful. Yeah. You go to those kids and you learn so much.
And you know what, Steve? I mean, it's true. I've learned way more from them than they probably learned from me. But any parent also can understand that. My wife and I have 3 children now. We say it all the time. Oh my gosh, we thought we were going to be teaching them, but they're teaching us so much more. So as an educator, the same way that you look at your family, you have to look at your students in the same way. When there's a disconnect, when you don't see every child as being part of your community and your family, and we're all in this all together, that's when we have these issues of, I need to fix them. Because you wouldn't say that about your own child or your own family member. Again, it's mindset. So once we have the mindset that these are all of our children, this is literally the future, and we need to take care of them, because they're going to not only take care of the world, but they're going to take care of us.
That's a very good point. Grainer, I loved that comment that you just made, and I do have a question from that statement. Coach, for you, I'm wondering, do you have a teacher that comes to mind that kind of you felt did a really good job of finding you, of acknowledging the special components that you brought into education? Does anyone come to mind?
I don't like talking about myself. But I did have, so there's this one guy, Michael Colton, Coach Colton. He says it all the time. He's like, this is the best job I've ever had. And I'm like, Mike, stop. he's like, no, seriously, it's the best job I've ever had. So he actually went to school for math. He's like math guy, loves to geek out on math. He's actually in the services right now. And he told me recently, he's like, I think I want to change my career path. Like, I actually want to work with young people now. And like that part, like it kind of, it did touch me a little bit. I'm like, wow. You know what I mean? Like there are people out there, very highly skilled, very intelligent people that actually won't go into education because of all this other stuff that we're talking about. But he found a community where, wow, I'm working with young people. I love what's going on. I love my job. I'm getting paid for it. You know what? I can do this. And once we change that part, right, we should have the brightest, most educated, most talented people working with youth. It only makes sense. It only makes sense. So my thing is, okay, let me get all the chess players all together, and let's build an army of chess players and show them how to be great coaches. And let's just see how far we can go with this.
I want to ask a question about just sustainability. First of all, part of it you've already said that I thought was marvelous. I think Jessica and I were both nodding in a big way when you said, you know, we teach kids to play chess. They grow in the work. They become mentors. They become paid mentors. Paid mentors eventually become paid coaches. That is just a brilliant, brilliant model. And I hope we all took note of that, because that is amazing. But it also takes money, and, you know, and to sustain your program. And I can't imagine there aren't a ton of people listening to this that wouldn't say, how can I help? And maybe we can ask that question, you know, how can others help, whether it's, you know, ways to donate or ways to give to your program that really has its own built-in inner sustainability, but maybe needs a little bit of boost from the outside too.
Yeah, no, thank you, Steve. I appreciate the question. You know, there's so many ways to get involved. You can volunteer, you can come in. I'm always looking for coaches. I'm always looking for coaches. You know, what I've learned, and I think a lot of nonprofits can take note to this, is that people want to invest in companies and organizations that are thriving. A lot of times it's a situation of where we need money or we're going to have to like close our doors, which it happens. You know what I mean? We want to position ourselves of we're a thriving organization. Look how much we've done with so little. Look at the stories we have with so little. So imagine what we can do if we had this. I look at it, you know, it's not a donation. It's an investment. It's a real investment. And so really, you know, like if you believe in young people and they can really change our future, right? This is an organization that you want to be a part of, but not just a thing of just drop your money off and just go. Like, no, like if you're a business person and you know how to help people with strategy and, you know, planning and all that, well, we need that too. There are grassroots organizations out here that are passionate about the work, but they don't have the accountants and the attorneys and all that stuff in place. So there's so many ways to give. And I don't know, people just maybe are not aware of like what they can do. But that, I mean, that stuff is powerful.
Well, Coach, I want to respect your time. We're coming towards the end, and I'm so honored that you joined us. It is inspirational what you're doing to the game of chess. And so I feel a lot of gratitude for the lives that you're changing, that you'd give us your time. And I really hope that you do know, I think it can be easy to kind of be in the middle of it and take for granted the lives that you are changing. So I do hope you are aware that you are doing some amazing work out there. And it was just so cool to hear everything that your program does.
I appreciate that so much.
I think the program has done something for you, because I wish people could see you and see you talk about this and the enthusiasm and the heart that is there. And I'm sure they can hear it. But Jessica and I have the privilege of being able to see it. And it's just a program that to me, just we would all want to support.
Thank you all so much. Really, really, really. I mean, like you say, it's like I actually feel like very lucky that I'm actually in this position to help people like this. I mean, really, I never saw it coming. I wish I could say like, this was like my master plan. It just happened. And I'm like, all right, well, this is my life's work now. So let's do it.
It's a great master plan. And again, thank you so much, Coach.
Thank y'all.
Hello, my name is Luce, the Lindbergh High School senior intern who edited today's episode. Education Suspended is a production of Intricate Roots and Educational Consulting Services. Our producer is Jessica Pfeiffer. Our Education Suspended website was created by Grainer Media. Our production manager is Gina Henson. Music is provided by Spastic Pinky.